All right. Nothing bad can happen. It can only good happen.
Nothing bad can happen. It can only good happen.
That's our meditation. That's before going into podcasts. Like, Nothing bad can happen. Only good can happen. It's like a Sam Harris meditation app. Welcome to Human Reaction.
We're talking about Nick Fuentes and Tucker Carlson. Broke the internet, as that goes. And all the fallout. There's a lot of interesting little, you know, details here. But before we get into it, make sure to like and subscribe. Leave a comment below. Let us know what you think. And let's dive into it.
This episode is brought to you by Revved Up Promo, the official apparel partner of Human Reaction. Revved Up is a premier full-service shop specializing in laser engraving, screen printing, and embroidery. Not only are they now making all of our apparel right down the road from us, they can do the same for your brand and ship it to you anywhere in the world. Revved Up helps you navigate the extensive universe of merch options and uses state-of-the-art techniques to showcase your brand in its very best light. So if you want to support our show and our generous sponsor, you can now do so by buying our merch and by turning to Revved Up Promo for your own custom apparel needs. Reach them at revveduppromo.com. That's with two V's and two P's, or just check the show notes for a link.
Okay, so first off, I guess where we are starting right now is it did really break the internet. It's kind of like the numbers are crazy on this. Just looking at the YouTube alone, it's 4.2 million right now.
Tucker averages around like 300, 400, on 500, 1,000 per video. And he, like the 9/11 series does get it in the millions, but this one is 4.2 mil.
And the comment section is something else. I canceled my Grindr date with Ben Shapiro to watch this. hitting some highlights here. I met you and I walked past a nickel without stopping to watch this.
That's like the classiest old school Jew joke ever.
I sold my house to BlackRock to watch this. Matt Walsh asked the Daily Wire for permission to watch this. I'm a boomer and stopped squandering my family inheritance to watch this.
Man, comment section is
The comment section is wild.
Yeah.
I canceled my wedding to a cute Mossad honeypot to watch this.
Ah, reference. Reference joke, that one.
This might be the best comment section I've ever seen on YouTube. it's quite something, but just to kind of get you a feel, it's kind of like two feds walked in to greet each other.
We had a contentious dialogue.
Well, I thought you were a fed.
I thought you were a fed.
I was a fed.
Yeah.
I'm not a fed.
Now, if you're not a right winger, that might seem really weird, but that's pretty much how all right wingers meet each other for the first time.
That's how everybody feels.
Yeah. Oftentimes. Yeah. Like, wait, huh? You're a fed? You're a fed? Yeah, the Spider-Man meme.
Kyle's still not convinced I'm not a fed.
Oh. I'm not convinced I'm not a fed.
I think he's working for Canadian intelligence. Oh, wait. They don't have any of those.
They're not intelligent.
Oi. No, oy. That's wrong.
Except
that's
for those Albertans. Yeah. Side note, there's apparently like a lot of movement on the Alberta separatist movement with like actual conversations in the White House that have been happening.
I've heard that.
Which is kind of crazy to think about.
Story to me. That seemed like a, how do we distract the media this week? You know, well, Pinky, and it's like, we'll have a conversation to leak it to the press and we're going to take Canada.
Well, the thing is like, yeah, it like the leaking of that came like months after the conversations were actually happening. But apparently it's just interesting. Interesting developments on that front. We'll see.
Get back on topic.
Anyways, you brought up Canada, and I have to talk about my my homeland. Because I want to bring them freedom. I want them to be saved. Anyways.
So this is our Nick Fuentes part three. So if you want to know some more thoughts about kind of Nick Fuentes and analysis on that, we've done two other videos on it. Check it out in the history. Maybe even Ben will put it into the thing. But we're diving into this because is this... when Nick Fuentes goes mainstream is the question. Like, is he hit the generational run to the point where he is now just as like mainstream as any other commentator?
You know, it's kind of interesting you say that because I was listening to Piers Morgan on my way in here, and Dave Smith and Seth Dillon were both debating on this, and Dave Smith made a point of being like, he is mainstream now. Yeah, like, yeah, right. Like, it's not about like preventing him from being mainstream. It's like, he is actually mainstream now at this point, you know?
The cancellation failed.
This is over. Completely failed. Yeah. But yeah, so we're going to start off, we're going to hit some highlights from the podcast itself, give our, you know, our thoughts on some of the major points that have been up for discussion through the internet. Then we want to dive into a lot of the reactions to it, because the usual figures are not very happy with Tucker's platforming of Nick Fuentes.
Yep.
But first, we want to talk about one of the big clips I saw was him talking about ICE detention centers and him being asked of like, what would you do about the situation if you were in charge of the country? If you were dictator on day one.
The other thing I'm really worried about is what's happening at these ICE detention centers, where it's happening not far from where I live in Broadview, Illinois, where they set up an ICE detention facility and the administration is rounding these people up, which I support, but they're doing it in a very provocative way. They're broadcasting it. They're making hype edits on Twitter of like these raids on apartment complexes, which I think are very cool, but it's somewhat provocative. And Antifa showing up. In order to protect ICE, the administration's putting DHS. Well, now they're protesting the DHS presence, and the administration of the governor of Illinois and the mayor of Chicago are telling Chicago police, don't help ICE. And they're encouraging the protesters. And what I see there is like a level of tension that just keeps increasing.
Yes.
And there's leadership. There's civilian leadership on both sides, like the governor and mayor who are Democrats won't back down versus a Republican president. There's a security division too, the police versus ICE, the police versus DHS. There's a constitutional question about the federal supremacy, you know, and I see all the ingredients of like a low boil civil conflict, full blown civil war. And I'm not that guy, but I see all the ingredients there for that to happen. So I'm deeply concerned about where that will go.
How would you handle it if you were in charge? If you're the president, what do you do about that?
I think maybe this is controversial, but they have to crush the other side. They have to, because you can do one of two things. You cannot challenge the left and let them do their thing, or you can utterly confront them and defeat them and remove hope from the equation. If you resist, you will be arrested. Like, this is an insurrection. There's 10 million people here illegally. We're getting them out. You're rioting. You're going to jail too. Like, it has to be crushed. But if you do anything less than that, if you do in the middle, all you're doing is antagonizing and feeding the other side. And if they think there's a chance they can win, they will get bolder and stronger and they'll start to rally. And that's when it's sort of like people think it's close or like it's contentious. That's when it breathes. That's when oxygen is fed to this kind of fire. So if I were Trump, I would say screw 200 National Guard, like arrest the mayor of Chicago, like arrest the governor. Shut it down, like make it clear, like Washington, you know, bring in the troops and say the federal government is supreme. The immigration law is a law of the land. If you're not on board with that, you're going to jail. If you attack ICE or box them in with your car, you're going to jail for a long time. Anything less than that, you might as well just not even bark up that tree at all.
Danger zone.
Yeah, big danger zone. Yeah. It's an interesting point. Well, what do you think about that, Kyle?
I think from a game theory perspective, I think that's probably accurate, just from a game theory perspective. I think that you have to, in order to win the battle, I think you have to like embarrass the other side to an extreme degree. I think that half measures are not going to work. I think that there's kind of now, but then there's like kind of like my idealistic side where I'm looking, I was like, it gets a little hairy, right? Like, I worry about that being like escalatory in conflict. Mm-hmm. That's one of those things. Like, you get into the idea of like the federal government arresting mayors.
That
starts to get kind of crazy, right? Well, like, it's
to me, that's the he's going to be a dictator coming to fruition.
Yeah,
there's no win there.
The only other person that I'm aware of that arrested governors was Lincoln during the Civil War. So and there was some close calls with FDR, if I remember right. The the way I would look at it is there's a fundamental lack of recognition to the complexity of the American system here, where, yes, there is a federal supremacy clause, but the direction of the local police is at the hands of the governor statutorily and constitutionally, right? The federal government is a creation of the states. The states have a range of freedom because the federal government's supposed to be of limited powers and defined powers, resting governors for the direction of their... Okay, don't get me wrong. If a governor was saying, police, shoot at ICE, yes, okay, totally with you, no problem. That's an easy calculation. That's insurrection, right? Then you have a basis for that.
It seems like we're bordering up, getting closer and closer to that, though.
Yeah,
like, that's
yeah.
what it seems like yeah. at this point in time.
As far as for people boxing ICE in or stopping egress or degress from a building, that's already a crime and is already being prosecuted. There's a lady going to jail for that, using her vehicle for doing that. Now, there was even a shooting at one point. We covered it on the show surrounding that.
Is that the guy who accidentally shot two migrants when he tried to kill members?
No, this is a different thing. This has had to do with like this vehicle thing where they tried to box the ICE vehicles in and prevent them from leaving. And then this lady got out. They thought she had a weapon. Police shot her. There was like conflicting reports. The FBI has been very unclear about what exactly the status of the case is and exactly what the case, you know, evidence is.
Doesn't sound like them.
Yeah. I don't know where it's going to go, but I do think it's an interesting moment. I'm not sure if the goal is to prevent the escalation. I'm not sure if you can head that off by arresting mayors and governors for their directives to their police, which is usually a police prioritization power that they have to be able to say, we're going to emphasize this, not this. We're going to enforce this, not this. Because then this is the stupid part of the state. And obviously the most obvious limited government observation that we made so many things a priority of the police that we can now rank order them and just have the things at the bottom list just never happen, which that means your government's doing too much if you have that many things.
Well, this is maybe a little bit broader from ICE, but it's kind of like defeating the left per se, or like this ideology and kind of these mind viruses that have been really persistent throughout the country is you have to go all out in making it like completely embarrassing to have those ideas in a lot of ways. Like, and it's the same thing. If you're a protester, like a person that's constantly going to these protests and you're like doing vandalism and you're like throwing objects at police officers or other people and stuff like that. At that point, like I think where the average American is starting to get to the point where it's like, yeah, your life is forfeit now. Mm-hmm. It's becoming more like that. And I think the closer we get to that point is where we start getting into very dangerous territory. Mm-hmm. But like, you know, it's...
Well, it shouldn't be confused. Yeah. The left is definitely the aggressor in this by trying to disrupt federal law enforcement while they're doing a legal thing for them to do. The same thing that Obama did that they didn't show up to try to stop at that point. So we know this is all just partisan nonsense. It has to do with stopping Trump more so than does have to do with anything else. Right?
Yes.
Because Obama has more deportations than Trump. So therefore, obviously, they were doing more actual grabbing people and putting them away. They just weren't doing it, as he said, provocatively.
I was just
But I
say,
think that's partially yes. where the embarrassment of it comes from, is they're owning it rather than trying to do it secretly and then get exposed, which could actually give more oxygen to the opposition. One other thing, I'm not sure that government action won't create a worse reaction.
That's what I worry about.
Where it actually creates more public sympathy for the anti-Trump forces at that point. I think it's a worthy discussion, but unless there's an order to like for police to actively interfere, then it's pretty clear.
There's another side of this though, is like the Trump administration is beginning to try and like actively starve out the money flows that go to a lot of these groups that do this type of stuff, which is kind of where we're seeing a lot of the Soros dialogue and Open Society and those things, because you can't underestimate how much of these opposing factors are astroturfed from NGOs, the nonprofit sector, all of that stuff, right? So the more that you kind of starve that out, it makes ICE's job a lot better or a lot easier in the long run. But also there is a kind of mimetic shift where like you have on the internet all these government agencies, they're like posting Halo memes and things like that, Halo, which is like thing, yeah. like it's becoming yeah. like they're mimetically capturing the moment where I like even just your average American that's not even necessarily like the immigration is their big thing, they're looking at those and like, yeah, you got like that's I'm starting to see that right. more and more that's right. coming up too, which is kind of where, you know, we often talk about like what's cool and what's not cool, and that's kind of like the future of what takes off culturally speaking, where being on ISIS side or being on like the anti-immigration side or whatever, it's just becoming so much more. Did I say ISIS's side? It sounded
you
like I
no,
said.
No, you said ISIS side, but it sounded like ISIS. Yeah.
Being with ISIS is cool.
Being on frozen water side.
I was thinking ISIS, like the terrorist organization.
Yeah, like Syria. Yeah.
Not saying that. But it's becoming much more like cool. And there's like almost this. Metaphysical is maybe not the right word, but there's this like, it's embarrassing to hold the other view. And I think mm-hmm. I'm from the Fuentes stuff where like, if you want total domination, if you make it absolutely embarrassing to be having the other views, like those mayors are going to stop getting elected. Like those, you probably get to the point where you don't have to.
I don't know. I don't know if it's not so entrenched that these Democrat cities are going to continue to be the way they are. But that said, the real question to me isn't so much as are they getting the cultural high ground.
Yeah.
He's claiming that the best thing to do is to head it off and just start arresting governors and mayors, which is a very different claim.
But like, she said, this might be a controversial take.
Yeah, it is. Well, I mean, I can see why I said that.
It was.
Yeah. Nick Fuentes here with a controversial take.
Never heard of that before.
Yeah, it's interesting because like I saw a lot of people where it's just like, oh, Tucker and Nick, they just want authoritarianism. And you're like, there is a sense to that. But like, there is also a, like, I think a lot of this is just their interpretations of the current existing laws. Like, I don't even know if they're even proposing like we need new laws here. It's like the current existing laws, like there's sedition that's going on here. And yeah. like there needs to be trials that are happening in regards to sedition at this moment. Like this is,
but I'm not
seditionous acts is what they're claiming. Right.
And I'm just not sure that directing them not to help is sufficient for that case mm-hmm. because of police prioritization traditionally being at the discretion of them. And having that division is actually an important institution of America, right? Meaning that the sheriff gets to determine what happens with the sheriff's budget and department. It can't get federalized, mm-hmm. right? That's what separates us from the unitary states of Europe and of the rest of the world, is that we have actual localism with actual authority.
Yeah, the county sheriffs have a lot of sway on like whether or not the feds can come in and do something. They have like in some ways the most power,
right? And so same thing with mayors, same, with the police departments, and same thing with governors with their resources, the highway patrol mostly. So that is the question. And I'm not even saying I like these governors not doing that. I think they should provide support. I think that would be the right thing to do. I think this is all ideologically motivated because they weren't doing this when Obama was doing it. So therefore, it's all bullshit. It's all theater. It's all kabuki.
Well, it is, and to echo that is I remember back Shadows. In 2020 I remember back in 2020 during the Summer of Love, that loving time,
fiery but peaceful.
I specifically remember during, and this is Trump 1.0, Trump being like, no, I'm not going to give the National Guard unless they ask for it. And he was kind of like, no, you got to beg for it, bro. Mm-hmm. in like Seattle, and I remember whoever the governor of Seattle, of Washington at the time, he was making a lot of waves.
Yeah, the governor, that would be the reserves. He doesn't control the National Guard. He only controls the National Guard when he federalizes it for an insurrection or for a war. So like the governors could deploy the National Guard anytime they want to.
Well, the point that I'm saying here is like, they were making these things as like, Trump's not doing enough by giving us like the federal side on the reserves and things like that. That was the story that was going on at the time back in 2020 in order to help stop the protests. But like they didn't, because it was kind of like the back and forth political lingo. Exactly.
Right? You're right. It is actually a political game to try to blame the Summer of Love on Trump somehow, which was stupid and ridiculous, right? They had, at the entire time, they had the power to call up their National Guard because that's what the governor, that's where that power rests. That's what the National Guard article actually says.
Moving on, this is going into because you know, so much of the conversation, especially so much of the reaction, has to do around the Zionism conversation of you know, shifting thoughts on Israel. This is specifically Tucker talking about Christian Zionism.
How do you explain Mike Huckabee, Ted Cruz, And there are a lot like that. John Bolton. I mean, I've known them all. George W. Bush, like the Karl Rove. I mean, all people I know personally who I've seen like be seized by this brain virus. Mm-hmm. And they're not Jewish. They're, and most of them are self-described Christians. And then the Christian Zionists who are, well, Christian Zionists. Like, what is that?
Right.
And I could just say for myself, I dislike them more than anybody, you know, because like what? Because it's Christian heresy and I'm offended by that as a Christian. That's why. So I don't like, why not? Like, I'm pissed at the neocons, very pissed. I've said that a million times. I've been mad since December of 2003 when I went to Iraq. And so like I went and asked straightforward questions to Ted Cruz, because that seemed like he was a sitting senator who's like serving for Israel by his own description. He seemed like a worthy target. I'm not going after MTG, mm-hmm. who's like the most sincere. Like, why not go after Ted Cruz? I don't understand.
Yeah. Yeah. They did this a lot where they would like introduce a topic that I think would be really great for Fuentes to engage with. And then they would kind of divert over to like some political decision or like personal beef that Fuentes has with other people in a worthy way, right? It is an open question about whether or not Fuentes has conducted himself in a way that actually adds to the coalition to stand against Zionism and in our foreign policy, or has it actually been destructive to those ends, as even if he's a fellow traveler on concerns about our foreign policy being too overextended and involved with the Middle East or directed by forces that want us to do our foreign policy on behalf of Israel. But I did think that people definitely latched onto, and I thought it was interesting, what do you think, Kyle, about this whole, it's a Christian heresy, and that's the worst kind of person. It's understandable that many Jewish Israeli people have a affinity for Israel, but these guys are really different. And why is that? And like, why is that extra bad?
Well, and that's the thing, is because when you just sit, when you're just like looking online and seeing all the responders to this that are responding super negatively that this conversation even happened, it's always the same people. Like, it's the same thread of people. And it's all the same kind of Israel shills, whether they be Jewish or Christian. Like, it's not even just like inherently just Jewish folks. Like, it's, there's the Christian dispensationalist folks that are
Andrew
with
Klavan.
This.
Types.
Yeah. Seth Dillon, like the Babylon Bee folks, they have a lot to say about this. Mm-hmm. And it's just, it's interesting that it's like, those seem to be the people that are the most concerned with this conversation happening right now. And, you know, and outright, he's talking about this being a heresy. And, you know, and this seems to be an interesting religious divide that's exists there, where it's just like, which I guess has been going on for, it's the dispensationalist thing, right?
Yeah. We've been talking about it for 2 years now, but it is interesting. Yeah. It seems to be exasperating,
yeah.
you know, getting worse over time. There's definitely a... well, at least the divide is getting more stark and deeper as people are really going from like, I don't think that's biblical, to that's heresy. You know what I mean? Yeah. Which is obviously one's implied by the other, but it's a stronger language use. And it's definitely a place where I see the Christian nationalist, you know, narrative kind of forming up. Like, even the young man we just interviewed, kind of his perspective on that is definitely disconnected from classical conservative understandings of how to think about foreign policy and how to think about these things in a way that I think is deepening this divide in a very important moment, especially for those people, right? Because they're on the outs when they do already have really big microphones. It's got to be a weird place, right? I mean, like, you've developed this huge following, and now like your position has actually become the minority within the movement.
Well, and it's interesting because like their followings, like they have big followings, but when you look at it in comparison to the biggest voices right now, it's they're dwarfed completely. That in itself is kind of interesting. Well, and you're also seeing like there's like the internet hysteria. Everybody's talking about like the $7,000 and things like that too. Becoming the big thing right now. But it's like it's notable to me where the people making the most noise is just that crowd. Like, there's a lot of people that could have their complaints about Nick Fuentes, but clearly by the numbers, it seems like everybody wants to hear what this conversation is going to be, right?
Yes. But 11 million views on that clip. Holy cow.
Yeah. And there's plenty of people watching that aren't going to agree with Nick Fuentes, but they're kind of like, this is an interesting question to have. I had people messaging me about the thing, be like, did you watch the, I had people watching, asking me about the Dave Smith Nick Fuentes episode and then also this episode, just being like, what are your thoughts on Nick Fuentes? Because he's interesting. I don't think I agree with him. Like, I have a ton of people that have been messaging me those types of things. He was like, this kid is making a major splash. But there's like the same people that like, you must hate him. You must denounce him. Mm-hmm. This is a scourge that must be purged from the conservative movement. It's like that in itself is just such an interesting dynamic in the moment to me. It's just it's the Civil War aspect of the Republican Party. It's like, okay, the Republican Party and quote unquote conservatism, it was one thing and now it's a different thing. Yeah. And we're all fighting over what that actually means now. Mm-hmm. But anyways, the next clip I pulled was them talking about identity politics.
Yeah. So we're actually doing this in a little bit reversed order, but I actually think it helps because that's about the Christian Zionist. Now we're actually going to get into where Fuentes has the most amount of controversy around him, which is his views on Jewish power and
Jewish identity
in America, what it means. Yeah.
I mean, as far as the Jews are concerned, I think that, like I said, you cannot actually divorce Israel and the neocons and all of those things that you talk about from Jewishness, ethnicity, religion, identity. And let me give you like a perfect example. So you say on your show that we need to treat Israel like any other country. And I sort of understand that in principle because Israel is another foreign country.
Yeah.
But Israel is unlike every other country in the sense that because the Jewish people are in a diaspora all over the world, they're significant numbers of Jews in Europe, but also in the United States. And because of their unique heritage and story, which is that they're a stateless people, they're unassimilable, they resist assimilation for thousands of years. And I think that's a good thing. And now they have this territory in Israel. There's a deep religious affection for the state. It's bound up in their identity, the story of the Exodus from Egypt, the promise of the land, all these things. So let's say in the United States, for example, somebody like a Sheldon Adelson, he's not Israeli. Is he an ideological neocon? Does he believe in the promise of democratic globalism? I don't think necessarily. His heart is in Israel, and it's because he is a proud Jewish person. And I guess what I'm saying is that if you are a Jewish person in America, you're sort of, and again, it's not because they're born, but it's sort of a rational self-interest politically to say, I'm a minority. I'm a religious ethnic minority. This is not really my home. My ancestral home is in Israel. There's like a natural affinity that Jews have for Israel. And I would say on top of that, for the international Jewish community, they're extremely organized. And many of them are critical of Israel or Israel's current government or the project of Israel. But I guess what they have in common, unlike, let's say, like Singapore, for example, is that they have this international community across borders, extremely organized, that is putting the interests of themselves before the interests of their home country. And there's no other country that has a similar arrangement like that. No other country has a strong identity like that. This religious blood and soil conviction, this history of being in the diaspora, stateless, wandering, persecuted, and in particular, the historic animosity between the Jewish people and the Europeans. They hate.
Stop there. Get
the vibe. Yeah. So I think this is the best pitch that he's made for his perspective, obviously moderating it substantially, right? And from if you watch his older stuff to now.
Well,
right?
It's also just like he's describing what he's seeing. And I think that what he's seeing is true, is that you have a group of people who identify themselves this way. It's similar to like, especially when like BLM was such a big thing back in 2020. And so it's like you had a group of people identifying with this like shared history of slavery. And then all of their politics stems from that identification that they have. Mm-hmm. Jewish folks are the same way because of this like shared history that exists there. And, you know, like white Americans and stuff, like we've been sitting here in Western, like we've been very westernized or so to say, and we almost like have purged that identity type of idea out of our thoughts in a lot of ways.
We used to have it, right? And it still exists. Like you can go back to the 90s and find stories about decisions that Bill Clinton made specifically for the Polish vote. right? Like these are those are real variables throughout American history. It's I'm not saying he's wrong in terms of
it's not as strong as this. Like this is very strong.
Yeah. Pole. Well, and it's also yeah. There's a gain to it, right? It's a harder signal, right? It's a more passionate signal in many ways. Not to underway. I mean, for example, American entry on behalf of in World War I was a contentious issue amongst the German Americans who lived in America at that time, right? I mean, it was a big deal. Same thing for Polish Americans and French Americans and things like that. That you know, who are one generation away from immigrating here, somewhere between two and four generations, which is where we're at with a lot of white Americans now, that ethnic identity is completely gone, right? Mm-hmm. And that might be true. And there might be even a much stronger, more passionate, more like what he's kind of pointed to. I think the texture there is right, where Jewish communities have a much more religious ethnic identity here built in, even amongst non-Israeli Jews or non-religious Jews. If you just could play for a little bit further until it gets to the Eric Weinstein thing here, and I think it's worth pointing out.
The Romans, because the Romans destroyed the temple. That's why Eric Weinstein goes to the Arch of Titus and gives it the finger and takes a picture. We don't think like that as Americans and white people. We don't think about the Roman Empire and 2,000 years ago. They do. Mm-hmm. And so...
Yeah, so and that's a real thing. Like, you could bring up the tweet. It's like, Eric Weinstein, who isn't like the biggest next one.
He's not even like religiously Jewish, really.
Yeah. Here's him giving a finger.
This is, in fact, I have an obligation to stop excusing anti-Semitism in struggling communities just because the last 75 years in the U.S. have been pretty good for the Jewish community. To us, 75 years is the blink of an eye in our long history. Here I am saluting at the Arch of Titus. And this is him giving the finger.
Yeah. So let's unpack this argument from Weinstein here,
because that's the interesting. Because like this is always the thing. Is like the identity politics has always been this like, you know, like my natural inclination is always to jump to much more of an individualism type of like I'm an individual. Like I have that libertarian instinct in me, but it always took me a while to kind of like understand. Not everybody's like that.
Yeah. Right.
Like other people, they have this like this collective like mindset of I am part of this group that is based off of my skin color or my religious background or whatever. Mm-hmm. And some sort of historical nationality background. But like I'm sitting here as like, I have Welsh blood. I'm not sitting there like complaining about the Romans conquering the Welsh, you know?
I'm really like, upset about what they did in Gaul.
But then like, they're just like, yes, I'm really upset about what happened 2000 years ago with the Romans. And like, there's like this animosity that exists there, which is like fascinating that people go that far back and they are still thinking about that in such a way. Like it's strange, but then when you talk about it, that there's people that are connected and communicating and shape their political ideologies and form political cliques about that, and then they try to enact change based off of those feelings and those like identity feelings, all of a sudden you're like, whoa, anti-Semite or slur about hating that group of people. It's just like, no, like I'm just identifying that you people identify that way, yeah. You know, like, and like, this is a part of your worldview right now.
Right. Imagine it for a moment, like maybe to try to emotionalize it for a white person. Mm-hmm. Imagine for a moment you grew up your entire life thinking that the Romans could show up at any moment and wiped us out like they did during the Celtic genocide of Germany, Gaul, that the Romans did. Wiped them out worse than the Jews in the sense, right? Like the entire culture disappears because of the Romans. Right. And now they built an arch to it. And like you still are thinking about that today. Mm-hmm. Right. And that's Weinstein's point is like, yeah, it's been really great in America for Jews, but we have a much longer history of our understanding of being a unique people persecuted by everybody else.
It's a unique hate that mutates.
Yeah. Therefore, you know, I can express my ethnic hatred at this arch here. And if you don't know, the
curse you Arctic architecture,
the Arch of Titus is the arch that was built in Rome after the sacking and destruction of Jerusalem by the Romans. Yeah. So, and like, obviously that's the start of the diaspora and the end of the temple. Right. So, which is heavily tied in. Now, that is something in those people's identities and philosophies. Now, the question is how to contend with that. How to contend with that's really important, right? Because if you say, we need, therefore, what we should do is we should have a resentment-based ideology for white people, a grievance for white people about how terrible it is to be white and how oppressed we are by everybody else. Mm-hmm. Is that a positive development for our community, for America?
And this is kind of the difference between like Tucker and Nick. There, it's like Tucker himself, like he says it all the time, is just like that he's worried about the identity racial politics emerging, you know, when it comes to that type of stuff,
as well.
It's like he's more wanting to pull back to just being like, let's look at people as individuals. We have our nation, but like, and we have a shared common values. That's why, like, in some ways, we're talking about the Christian nationalism thing. Like, sometimes, like, it's like the Christian nationalism thing is probably better than like the racial nationalism thing, because it's much more about like a set of principles and ideas, where like the racial nationalism, it feels like they're replacing the principles and ideas, and they're just replacing it with like, well, there's an easy identifier, which is like skin color or whatever, you know, mm-hmm. like there, that becomes a,
well, and there's a supremacy argument there. Yeah. And there's all the things about like how we're so great because we conquered this land. That's that argument, right? Mm-hmm. Which to me is just simply uncompelling, right? It's about the things that actually created the good things in life, right? What are the institutions and values and principles that allowed people to build a country that is great, that is good, that allows people to flourish? Those questions were imported from Europe, from multiple places in Europe and multiple different traditions, not just Christian too. Very specifically, property rights itself comes from Dane law, which is pagan. Well, how do we contend with that? How do we deal with that? Right? Like those sorts of discussions and debates about what is our institutions, I think are super valuable and should be, and we should celebrate those institutions when they have positive good things that we can look to. The question is how to contend with these uprising philosophies like Fuentes and stuff that look at that, you know, oh, you're talking about how we can all come together as a single country despite these differences. That's like boomer cuckerism, right? You're not looking at the world as it really is. You're just operating in a enlightenment delusion is the way they see it, right? Which there might be something right about that. But I think there's also delusion in thinking that we can just be a white country too. Like that's also delusional. And like, you don't see anything about America as it is. You're just so focused on what you want it to be. That's not anywhere close to where we could be. And that's Tucker's kind of making that point.
Well, then that's the thing. Cause like my exact attitude about Fuentes is that there are truths within some of the things he's saying, but I don't agree with them fully. And like, I agree with a lot of the things of what he's like seeing. Mm-hmm. Like what he's describing is what he's seeing. I disagree with a lot of the conclusions he comes to do with necessarily like about what to do about those things. Cause like, and I think part of it too is he came up through a lot of the same organizations and politics that I came up through. He was just like 2 years after me. Mm. So like I knew a lot of the people that kind of screwed him over in that time period. Like he talks about, I found the first 30 minutes of his conversation to be very interesting, because it's kind of like his origin story and him going through like the going through Yale, going through the Leadership Institute, going through all these organizations, which are kind of these like right-wing conservative / libertarian organizations that really try to capture young people and kind of like foster young people in college. Like Turning Point USA is also a part of that network. It's more of a newer network, but has become dominant, right? Where he started seeing kind of this, like, you know, he goes to college, he starts interacting with all these people, and then he starts realizing that he's like, man, there's some hypocrisies going on in these institutions and kind of what they specifically about the Israel question, where I had a similar thing where I was flown out to this, kind of like training networking seminar thing. There was the big topic of conversations at the time were free speech. It was all this free speech stuff. Like the left is attacking free speech. And we, had this kind of like workshop with a very prominent figure. I'm going to leave a lot of names, unnamed in here. And there was a lot of these conversations of like, what are some of the, free speech issues going on in your college campuses? And one of the groups that was there was a bunch of these young Jewish gals. And, you know, everybody's talking about like the Yale people, they're all talking about like, oh, they're just trying to censor this speech and stuff like that. And these young Jewish gals, they're just like, we got a teacher fired for being anti-Semitic. And I was just sitting there. I was like, it was like this like wake up call where I was like, whoa, that's a different thing than what we're talking about right now. And just being like, and everybody's like, oh, cool, cool, cool. And I was like, what? Like it was one of those things where I was just like, wait, What? Like, that's like the opposite of the thing that we're doing right here.
Yeah.
In this moment where I was just like, that was like kind of like a step back for a moment being like, whoa, there's something happening here. And Nick kind of had those same types of moments where he was like with the Daily Wire, like, why are we giving all this money to Israel? And he was just like, it was like a genuine question of like, why are we doing this? And then Pete, that thing starts to seep in and then it grows into this thing. You're just like, okay, everybody starts noticing everything. And sometimes it takes a very dangerous path because they start really noticing. And then it becomes like they actually hate Jewish people kind of a thing down the road. And it, you kind of get a sense here in this interview too, where he's trying to seems to be pulling his audience back on a lot,
trying to pull back. And that's the thing, that's actually the thing that bothers me a little bit about Fuentes. My biggest criticism is that he doesn't really defend his actual point of view when he's on interviews, but when he's on his own show, you actually get what he thinks, right? So when he's on his own show, he's giving the full Monty of his view of the world. And then, and it's understandable. There's also like, there's like a salesman part of that. There's like a, I'm trying to appeal to you and your audience. But also, there's also a little bit, I just get this like little bit of inkling of, you're not really giving it the full thing. And so that it allows you to then get access to these audiences without actually really honestly representing what you're about. And that's because, and that's specifically in the Jewish power analysis question to me. That's where it becomes, okay, you're actually looking at them as a group. I think you're doing so using deduction, but I think you're making an inference leap that is different than what you're saying when you're just saying, well, I'm concerned about this. You're actually being proscriptive about what other people think, despite of what that they're actually at. And I have a clip here. I kind of demonstrated this about when he's talking about Dave Smith as a good example. Now, this isn't to defend Dave Smith or his view or whatever this drama that happened between those two at this time. It's about his analysis as Dave, as a libertarian Jewish person who happens to agree with Fuentes about Israel's influence on our foreign policy. And this patterns well with what is his but it's obviously the actual thing he should have said to Tucker Carlson when Tucker Carlson pushes back on Jeffrey Sachs and other Jews that are with him on foreign policy.
I do want to just one extra tidbit of context is that this is several months old and it's before Dave had him again on his show recently, which was also Dave's biggest episode ever was the Knicks, which just kind of shows the numbers and of this dialogue.
So once again, what's really going on here? And is Dave Rubin really on our side? Can he be on our side?
Dave Smith, yeah.
If he is a Jewish libertarian, and listen, he's a nice guy. This has nothing to do with him as a guy. I'm sure he's a very nice man. He's an intelligent man. He's a respectful man. Let's grow up a little bit, though. We're all in politics, and we can disagree and criticize each other. And we can recognize each other's biases. I don't think as a Jewish libertarian that Dave Smith is really opposed to Jewish people having all this power in the world. I don't think he's fundamentally opposed to that. I don't think he fundamentally is on the same page as the rest of us. And yet he's being offered up as the spokesman for Daryl Cooper. He's being offered up as the spokesman.
So about Jewish people having power in our society. And the question is like, there is a difference between where I say, hey, I'm very concerned about these particular actors and their placing of another country's foreign policy interests above ours, right? That's the dialogue that people are having. But Fuentes is having a different dialogue that's kind of to the side of that and more radical that I think he backs off from when he's confronted him on interviews, which was what I think Tucker Carlson was trying to do and maybe didn't succeed at doing, which is this power analysis says, no, there's something about all Jews that leads them this way that they are willing to accept a step from where I want to go. They won't go as far as I will. As far as I want to go is, and there's other clips of this that you can find of him saying, we need to imprison and or kill people who are the leaders, who are occult leaders, Jewish people who are leading the cabal that is leading the country to ruin.
Now, I my assessment is a lot of that, because there becomes a part where I think he gets into hyperbole a lot. Like he's very hyperbolic on his show.
Yeah.
And like, I actually think he's more extreme on his show than his actual views. And he's less extreme than he is on other people's shows. Right. Like I think that there's a lot of that. But then that then spreads to like his audience is like, they're becoming very, they become very meme-y, their internet, you know, all that stuff where it grows and grows and grows from that, like the extreme hyperbole. Seems to me.
I just want someone to ask Fuentes, what are you going to do about MAGA? What are you going to do about that? If you had the power, what would you do? You know, and let them, that's MAGA is a specific group of, and it's a known thing. You can find it on Wikipedia. It's a group of Jewish billionaires that have had a long-term, very robust influence on American Israeli Jewish relations and American foreign policy.
I thought you were just struggling to say MAGA again.
No, no, I can say MAGA. I just sometimes say it with a long A.
MAGA.
But you know what I mean? Like that's a, like, what's he going to do with Bill Ackman? Like, what do you do about that? Well, okay. So there's a big difference between like, and I'm just genuinely curious because of his rhetoric. And if he's saying, well, he's a real person, it's really him when he's doing interviews and is when he's putting on a character, when he's doing his own shows, like, I don't know, man.
Well, I think he softens himself on other interviews because he's trying to be cordial and stuff like that. But I also like on his show, he's very hyperbolic. Like,
yeah.
I'm hyperbolic on this show.
Yeah, sure,
right?
Sure.
Like, people are kind of overemphasizing
over the top
on their,
a little bit too.
Right? Like, I think there's a lot of that's going on.
I get it. I think
he is actually maturing in a sense too, in a lot of it.
Okay. But once again, like this point on Jewish
up,
power.
Like Al Qaeda.
like Syria's leader. Yeah, yeah.
What was I saying?
Oh, it was, this was only a year ago, mm-hmm. right? This is not that long ago. The power analysis question is a philosophical question, though. This is his leap into the conclusion that Dave Smith is insufficient in some key way. I'm not saying this because he's just a pure racist. I'm not saying that. I think when he says, "Oh, I believe that everyone's created in the image of God and equally deserving of dignity because of that," as a Christian, I believe him. He says that, I believe him. Fine. My point being that the power analysis interest question says the ethnicity is greater than the individual in this moment, and he believes that. And that's the point he's making here. This is just one of the points where I can most easily point to that. Mm-hmm. There are many more that you can point to. Mm-hmm. And like that itself, I think, is the philosophical error where I disagree the strongest part of it. And I think that's what Tucker was trying to get to when he's talking about blaming all Jews. And Tucker and then when he's challenged on that, Fuentes just backs up like, "Oh, I believe that too. I think everyone has innate dignity." But he's not talking about the Jewish power question at that point. He's talking about a metaphysical question, not about what he's saying when he can subscribe to Dave Smith, his actual, you know, real limitations as what he's willing to do or whatever he is just because he's Jewish. Does that make sense?
Yeah. I do think that there's an added layer of psychology that goes into the Dave Smith thing, but also other people that he's like constantly been in feuds with in the past. And I think that there's a sense that he has, and he looks at Dave Smith and he kind of sees him as like, he sees Dave as kind of like this token of what the powers that be allow the Overton window to allow, but then he's canceled. So it's kind of like, well, you weren't canceled. I was canceled. Kind of like, there's kind of this like resentment there. I'm more truthful because I'm actually fighting the real established powers who were willing to cancel me, but you weren't canceled. Like, I think that there's a element of that. That's also
creeped into the psychology.
But also there's just kind of like, I'm closer to the truth because I was canceled element to it too. I think that there's also sure. some of that, and like, you know, they're not going to cancel their own kind of a thing. Like there's kind of that feeling that he is layering into that.
Right. Which is a conspiracy theory yeah. around the cancelization, as if it was only motivated by a selection of this. And I think, okay, so let me give him his credit. Where he's right is that Dave Smith is Jewish and likely doesn't want to, I don't know, round up and imprison all the people from MAGA, mm-hmm. right? Or Bill Ackman. But I don't think that's because he's Jewish. I think that's because he's actually a Westerner. And we believe that
I think that's... Well,
he's an American. That's also an American point of view.
Dave's
actually having opinions about things isn't a crime.
Dave's libertarian philosophy supersedes everything else, really.
Yeah, but it's actually a moderate case to say, mm-hmm. It's actually an American case, a Western case. I think I would suggest, I'm not the expert here, but I would suggest a Christian case to say, actually, to advocate for your point of view is not a crime here. Mm-hmm. And that's what these Jewish billionaires are doing. Now, are they super much more effective? Yes. Are they completely shrouded by all of these like taboos and cultural institutions that I think are bad? Yes. Okay, fine. But what when he's talking like this on his show and people then call him out as an anti-Semite because he's making this inference leap about other people's nature because of their ethnicity. Mm-hmm. And then he goes like, well, I'm not. Or when he calls himself a racist and then dives into the racial IQ discussion and dives into the I can predict whether or not someone's going to be good to the country based upon their country of origin simply because of the IQ numbers that average out of that country as a discourse on immigration. Then people say you're a racist and be like, well, I'm not. You know, I'm an American and I'm a Catholic. I believe everyone has innate dignity. You're running from it. You're running from the point. You know, you're not allowing people to actually get you on the issue and you're being slippery. And that's what I don't trust about it. And like, as much as I find it valuable that so much of the generation that he's leading in many ways is coming to grips with our foreign policy that brings us closer to align with maybe a more sensible America First foreign policy, I appreciate that. But I don't, I really want someone to contend with the philosophy here of what he actually thinks prescriptively.
Yeah. Well, because. Yeah, I guess kind of where I'm challenging your thoughts on this a little bit is I'm seeing a lot of what he's saying there as being like what he is describing himself seeing in the moment. Like I'm not really necessarily seeing the prescriptive side of it. Like it seems to me most of what he's saying here is actually like he's describing.
Yeah, in the Tucker Carlson interview, it's totally great. Yeah.
And I think he's misdescribing his views on Dave Smith in this moment, and he might even have changed thoughts on that since this time period, given that they have kind of made amends in a sense, in a way. But like, cause like what he's seeing in general, when it comes to the Jewish stuff is like, yes, there are groups of these people that are all kind of like culting up together. Right. And like, and that in itself is like, be wary of that there are people that are doing this. Like there are group chat threads. There are all these things where all these people are communicating with each other in order to advance certain interests. And it's just like, and purely in just like a political game theory mindset, you got to look at that and be like, okay, we got to contend with that.
Yeah.
Right?
I don't mind. I mean? I don't mind any at all pointing that out. Yeah. I have no challenge to that. I've said it, I agree a couple times now. All I'm saying is on his own show, when he's talking, different story, man. And yeah. I covered that on the other
problem. When I see that, a lot of that seems very hyperbolic, a lot of the things that people are pointing to.
Hey, you don't get me wrong. Like, when he's talking about Cowboys, I'm sure like, it's all a joke.
There's like a lot of jokestery stuff on there where it's like, the challenge there is like, I don't actually know where he prescriptively is on that stuff.
Yeah.
Because he's very jokey and trolly on that stuff.
And therefore, right? I don't know. And I want him to actually articulate his Jewish power theory and actually say that to Tucker Carlson if he has the balls to do so in the moment, as opposed to backing off to, well, I'm a Catholic. And that's my point. You see what I mean? Like if he makes that point then, and I'm not talking this is just him going over the top. I'm talking about a consistent story that he's telling about the world. And I think it goes through. You watch enough of them, I've been looking a lot at it. I think that's accurate.
I want to let's do a shift, just going over some of these reactions to the show.
For sure.
We had there was some interesting dialogues, and again, a lot of it's like all the same characters. Part of this, which, in a sense, I can imagine why you go deeper and deeper down the Jewish question thing, because. It's all the people that are super pro, Christian Zionist type of stuff. It's all the people where their biggest issue is the state of Israel, and they're always seem to be the ones that have the most problems with these conversations happening here. So, like, I can understand why you would go down a lot of those conspiratorial rabbit holes that exist there.
Sure.
But the first one here is we have from Joel Berry. He was somebody that was extremely,
Babylon B.
Yeah. One of the main people at Babylon B. For those on the right turned off by the moralistic pearl clutching over Fuentes and Tucker, I'll put it this way instead. Fuentes and Tucker are destroying the right and greatly hurting our ability to defeat the left.
Yeah. I don't think that's true. I don't. I really think that the Fuentes dialogue is a necessary one. I don't see how you don't.
Well, just the numbers of all these videos is crazy.
Yeah.
Well, it shows people want to at least contend with the dialogue.
But this is one of the more insidious takes too, because it's like, ooh, you keep talking about this, we won't be able to defeat the left.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, I know what you really want. You actually don't want to know what's true. You don't want to know what's valuable. You don't want to have an actual discourse within the right about things that are true and good and valuable. We need to defeat the left, and that's a more important point. And if by having this, I somehow can divine that this will keep us from defeating the left. How? What's the case there? I don't see it.
Yeah. Well, and it's the same thing. Somebody that's been a major topic of conversation as of late is this guy, Josh Hammer. Mm-hmm. And
promoting his book again?
Probably. Dude's always he's always closing, you know? He's always
ABC.
He's out there. You know, the last conversation I had with Charlie Kirk is people should buy my book. he's that guy. But yeah, here is him discussing Yikes. This.
To me, that is what the Tucker wing is trying to do. They're not trying to kind of have an inclusive movement, right? They're not trying to kind of have a marketplace of ideas, kind of free for all conversation. That's what they would have you believe. That's actually not what they're interested in doing. They're trying to burn it all down. They're trying to destroy the current iteration of the American right, literally destroy it root and branch, and then build something new in its stead. To me, that is what...
Is that what they're trying to do? Man. Okay. So there's some amount of insight in that, in the sense that there is a thing with the American right where we've been so afraid of being called the R word or the A word.
Autistic?
Retarded?
Anti-Semite.
Anti-Semite.
Yeah. You know, like just to be called a bad word, that these questions just wouldn't ever be brought to the forefront or allowed to have dialogue. And that's the sense in which I think there is an important discourse that has to happen, because you can't have an acceptance of the rule. You can't say it's perfectly acceptable to criticize the Black community about the problems within the Black community or the Native American community or the Latino community or whatever, but then say, but you can't talk about this, right? And then you're in a challenge, right? As soon as you start waving that you're one of the bad words crowd, we're no longer the free and open discourse party. So,
well, and I'll always remember that. Like, I remembered when, I realized the anti-Semitic thing was a big, like, was the right's version of calling everybody a Nazi or racist when I saw Ben Shapiro do it to Ron Paul, where like his exact logic was that the only people who care about the Fed is.
People
upset with bankers, and guess what? A lot of bankers are Jewish.
that's a Jewish stereotype,
and you're just like, what? Like, it was one of those things where I'm just like, whoa! But like, it like changed my view on Ben Shapiro as a person at that point in time. Mm-hmm. That was even before he had a show. He was still a Breitbart guy at the time.
Yeah, his tweets from back then were nuts.
Well, and it's a similar thing with Josh Hammer here. Is like he had a tweet that's deleted now that's been going around a lot, where he was talking about it's like deeply embedded. Anti-Semitism is deeply embedded. It's in the notes, right?
It's in the notes. We have that link. It is worth looking at. It is such. It's so bonkers that anyone takes this guy seriously after this tweet.
Is the tweet?
He should be apologizing to it every single time he's on a podcast. Like it's crazy.
I think I got it in the notes here. One second, it's loading. It's actually Nick tweeting it out. We'll get to this in a second, but Josh Hammer called, this is from Nick Fuentes. Josh Hammer called for me and Tucker Carlson to be neutralized after our interview. Will the FBI investigate that comment? Hammer is a Jewish extremist who believes that white people are born with anti-Semitism in their DNA. The anti-white filth needs to be held accountable. We'll get to the neutralized comment here in a section, but these are some old tweets he had. Was Jew hatred is inherited in the European DNA. Europe will never change. Jew hatred is inherent in its collective DNA. He said it again. Yeah. I am Jewish proudly. I advocate every single day of my life for the Jewish people and for Jewish state of Israel. So like these are the type of dialogue that does exist in these circles. And like, that's one of those things where it's just like pointing it out, you're deemed an anti-Semite and you're just like, what were you just like, come on, like Ben Shapiro, I thought we were against the identitarianism thing. This, you made your whole thing going on college campuses, talking about being against identity politics and dunking on like 18-year-olds about this topic when it came to like left-wing identity politics. But then you turn around and just call anybody anti-Semitic for whatever thing because they disagreed with you about something. It's like, that's the problem that is being identified.
And that's what they hate about Fuentes, is because he is a white identitarian. Mm-hmm. At least he plays in that circle, right? In that, maybe he doesn't say that, but it's there, right? And that's what the theme and the underlying narrative is. Therefore, it's repulsive to these guys and they can't let him have a voice, right? And they have to try to shame him out of public existence.
Yeah.
And that's the trick is, how did you contend with that? Is that where we should go And I just don't, I don't think white identitarianism is the way to go. I actually do think what we should be doing is being more individualistic and thinking in terms of what does the individual contribute. Now, this is the this is his article that he's talking about. It's actually towards the bottom.
Yeah, I'm just gonna like scroll through it here a little bit, but
this is a reprint, by the way.
Yeah, Tucker Carlson. Tucker Carlson just hit a new low with the heinous betrayal of my friend Charlie Kirk. Everybody's trying to use the Charlie Kirk death for their own ends. Who is surely now rolling in his grave? Also buy my book. That's what Charlie Kirk said.
And reading my book in heaven.
reading my book in heaven. Yeah, the exact quote was, "The fox is now comfortably ensconced in the hen house, and unless the fox is neutralized, the victim could be the entire extant GOP coalition itself." Mm-hmm.
So he's talking about is that Carlson is doing and this is a similar thing that he did to Dave Smith when he debated him, that any criticism of Israel is a criticism on MAGA and the American right in general, because it is the same to this guy. And that's what his book's about. His book's about how all of Western tradition comes from the Torah, right? And from Jewishness.
Yeah.
Right. And it's literally a Jewish supremacist argument, right? And we just accept that and move on as if that's not insane and crazy.
That was always the thing. Like, I always remember that back when Richard Spencer was a thing, everybody's like, white ethno-nationalism bad. And then it was just like, but support the state of Israel. And it was just like, is that not the same thing, guys? Like that's the thing that I find to be the most annoying about this. I don't really care about Israel that much. Like, I just don't really like...
How dare you?
Yeah, now I'm anti-Semitic. But, like, I just mean, like I don't like the propaganda about it. Like, I don't like all the, like, clear lies that I'm constantly being fed about it by, like, clearly sponsored influencer, like, a racket that exists online. Like, I don't like that. It's just annoying to me. Like that's really the thing that I'm
moral
most
army of all time.
Yeah. It's like slogans like that make it so much worse.
You'll be getting your $7,000 paycheck in the mail.
We're making money on this podcast now. Thanks, Bennett.
like that's the thing. Like, the thing that interests me the most actually over the commentary at all is just like the propaganda war around it. Yep. Right.
Well, and it's so filled with lies, right? Like, you can't look at Western institutions and everything that we have that's evolved over 2,000 years that created America and say, oh yeah, well, just the Torah, obviously, as if there's nothing else to contribute, you know, beyond that. Mm-hmm. Are there things from it? I'm sure his argument's probably more moderate than that. But my point being that just pointing out and having criticism of another country does not mean you don't like MAGA or the right in general or don't like America or these other stupid arguments.
Yeah.
Right. And they keep doing this. In fact, they do it themselves. I mean, Fuentes' argument is that they are so aligned in the identity to the state that they can't distinguish between the two. And that's what just keeps and the problem with that.
And that seems to be true. It's like that's how they view it.
Well, right? They keep on making that case for Fuentes, right? On Piers Morgan just today. Stephen Miller's wife's on and she's saying, how dare you criticize Jews? Like, how could you be so anti-Semitic to Cenk Uygur? And he's like, I'm not talking about Jews, I'm talking about Israel. Like, it's such a ridiculous exchange that happens, and that's not the first time it's happened. It happens over and over and over again where anyone who criticizes the state gets a criticize of that. That feeds the Fuentes argument. That makes him obviously, that's a proof of his point. Now, the trick is, and where it goes wrong, is where we're taking all Jews and we're putting that into that category. We're not just talking about the powerful Israeli Zionist Stephen Miller's wife, right? Who is actually close to power.
Yeah, I don't even like kind of getting into like the we're not talking about all Jews thing, because like obviously it's like a generalization thing. Is like there is this thing that's going on of groups of people kind of culting up around their own thing, and then they're enacting change based off of that through like this tightly knit kind of transnational network. Like that's kind of what it is, to be fair, like I think that there's other networks that also operate like this that aren't. It's not just Jews that do this. Like there are other transnational networks that are very tightly knit.
The Italian mafia,
kind of like fraternal orders. Yeah, Italian mafia type of stuff.
Yes. Cuomo,
Cuomo, yeah, right.
rigging the NBA and like, things like that, right? like
yes,
this is a thing that people are doing, and I don't think it's wrong to like say that people are doing that.
Well, yeah, you know? Yes, when you have instance of them doing
but
that.
But you get deemed a blood libel.
Can, yes, you know? And you can make the cultural point that I was trying to point to the same way we do about the black community. We're not saying Thomas Sowell is a gangster when we say gangster rap might have bad impacts on the black community, mm-hmm. right? Like, that's not what we're talking
Thomas
about.
Thomas Sowell specifically would say that in his books.
Yes, exactly. Yeah, exactly. But we're also talking about this, that the ethnicity isn't determined. Like, the outlook isn't determined by the ethnicity. That's the point. And like restraining that rhetoric from going there, and because that is a common error that does happen, and happens, and sometimes I think Fuentes actually commits that error.
There is one other thing I wanted to pull, just one more clip here from Fuentes talking about just kind of him responding to all of the backlash that has happened, and we'll probably close after this one. Mm-hmm. This is him talking, kind of specifically calling out people like Dave Rubin, Josh Hammer, Dinesh D'Souza. It is interesting how much Dinesh D'Souza is jumping into this, because it's just like,
he's actually the first one to debate Nick Fuentes, yeah. Like mainstream. Like, and in fact, that's actually a big part of the dialogue that's happened in the last few weeks, is this exchange that happened between Charlie Kirk and Dinesh D'Souza, where Charlie Kirk was like, Dinesh, you shouldn't have done this, right? Because it's giving oxygen to this guy and he's really toxic and all that kind of stuff. It's bad for the movement. So, in, you know, we're not going to go over today, but there were, you know, confrontations between Kirk and Groypers at his events that got very heated and were very much like, It's a real battle for what the soul and, you know, vision is for the center right that was happening at the time. That I mean, obviously, everyone knows that Kirk and Fuentes were on opposite sides of, but it is
very publicly known.
But it is gross how these guys are weaponizing it.
Yeah.
And Josh Hammer and Dinesh D'Souza, they all said that Tucker Carlson having me on his show was dishonoring Charlie Kirk. These are the people that are claiming I'm a monster.
Buy my book, too.
Dave Rubin, by the way, his entire shtick is free speech. I'm not a leftist. I'm a liberal. Okay, what does it mean to be a liberal, Dave? I thought it meant that we have open discussions, open conversations. We talk about ideas. Isn't that Dave Rubin's claim to fame? He's an idiot. That's the only thing he's ever said in 10 years is, don't burn this book. We should be able to talk. And Dave Rubin said, if you host Nick Fuentes, you're dishonoring Charlie Kirk. So now Dave Rubin is literally standing on the grave of a man who died a month ago. Literally standing on his casket and using the ghost of Charlie Kirk, a man who was brutally executed, to say, it's what Charlie would have wanted. Charlie would have wanted you not to platform Nick Fuentes. Wait a second. I thought his big claim to fame is that he debated anybody. Isn't that the case? That he had the microphone and passed it to everybody that had a question that disagreed. Isn't that the great tradition? Now Charlie Kirk's legacy is you need to shut it down. Now you're going to stand on the grave of Charlie Kirk and say, if you talk to Nick Fuentes, Charlie Kirk hates you from beyond the grave.
This is kind of the vibe that he's giving to all the people in the aftermath. But it is one of those things where I think one of the reasons why Fuentes has gained so much steam over the years is because there's just like blatant hypocrisies that are happening among all of these people, and like clear lies. Like if you just like and you just look at it, like basic things that are said about very specific topics, like, okay, they're clearly lying. But it, like, it's the same thing where like Dave Rubin did come to prominence kind of being the I'm classical liberal libertarian flirting with anarcho-capitalism, going on tour with Jordan Peterson, everybody deserves free speech, all that stuff, come debate us, that type of thing. That was like his whole I'm doing college tours, doing that stuff. And then once all this, like, and then over time, and his show kind of started to fall down quite a bit, and then he was out like calling people's employers about their anti-Semitism and stuff like that. Like, and you're just like, what happened to free speech, Dave?
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, I think
it's like that type of stuff.
Yeah, I think it's exposed a hypocrisy on the right that has made the space for Fuentes. If they had been better, I don't think he would have nearly the room that he does and nearly the audience he does if these guys had been better and actually true to their principles. If they had been principled, these things wouldn't be what they are. But there is a contradiction that has to be worked out. In the Hegelian sense, there's a thesis and an antithesis here, and there's like this giant contradiction that's just embedded in everything that has to get worked out through dialogue. And, you know, I think that's why Fuentes is should be talked to, put onto platforms and talked about and contended with, because there's no other way to really do this other than that, right? The only way to sort that out, the only way for him to actually get exposed to the rest of the world is for the rest of the world to experience him. And therefore to contend with his ideas and decide whether they're good or not. The whole like gatekeeping thing, and this is from that same Pierce Morgan interview, Dave Smith and that guy from the Babylon Bee. You know, there's this contradiction that they're like gatekeeping is good from these folks, that gatekeeping is good. And then anytime you challenge them, I'm like, well, I thought we were for free speech. Like, no. What I mean is the gatekeeping where you have them on the podcast and you make sure you crush them.
Yeah,
it's like, well, it's you can only have him on the podcast as long as you do it right, do it the way that he would do it, and that's this weird thing. Like you care more about the ends than the means, right? You don't care about how we get there, and I really care about how we get there. How we get there is by discourse and calling out, especially the very worst behavior, which is I totally agree with Fuentes on this. I think it's disgusting to stand on someone's grave like that and speak for him. I think it's really wrong.
Well, and also just maybe a final thought. It's interesting just when you hear him talk about his origin story and how he was very clearly like identified by the conservative, broadly speaking, like conservative media class, identified, and they were like, we're going to keep an eye on this kid, try to foster him a little bit. And then he like asked one or two questions about a very specific topic, and then all of a sudden, like, no, we have to crush this kid now, and everything just like flipped on a dime, mm-hmm. like that.
He's a knower.
He's a knower. you know, like that in itself too is interesting, because like it shows that, in a sense, the gatekeeping mechanism was there. Mm-hmm. One, the identification mechanism of like these people are talking about identifying people to foster for the movement, kind of in the future, but then also like watching them. Oh, they're a little off.
Yeah,
sweep them out.
Right,
let them be canceled. Turn a blind eye to the cancellations. Well,
and the fact that that mechanism exists, and that we've revealed so much about how AstroTurf, so much of the influencer class is.
Is
a big part of the current moment.
There's lists of people.
Yeah,
I've seen the lists of people because I've worked in organizations.
It's like Gamergate, right? Yeah. It's like the same phenomena where like there's this class of gaming journalists who all know each other, who all they coordinate on how they're going to cover and punish studios who don't give access the right way and all that kind of stuff in order to prop up, you know, perhaps art that isn't deserving of that, right? Same thing here. Propping up political argumentation on behalf of powerful foreign governments is a real challenge to our discourse that has to be confronted. And they've refused to do so. And it's exposing a money lie that that is necessary.
Yeah. Well, we are a Groiper podcast now.
I don't know. No. All I did was criticize. You might be a Groiper. No. I'm on the other hand.
No, I'm
kidding.
I grapple with the things that, and I understand the things that he's identifying, yeah. like the things that he's describing. I disagree with various solutions. I think that there's some truths to some of his solutions, like on a pragmatic level, but like I disagree with him fully on things. Like, but like what he's identifying, like I think those things are quite accurate. Like the actual, like, but it's kind of the same thing. Like, I say that about a lot of people that I disagree with. Like, there's a lot of philosophers where they're identifying something that's true, but I just completely disagree with their like,
sure,
way to go about it. Like, I think like Karl Marx made some points about class that are accurate. Mm-hmm. Doesn't mean I agree. I'm a Marxist and I agree with all of his like structures of his thinking and stuff like that. Right? Like, sure. I vehemently oppose a lot of that.
Yeah.
But like some of his class, things that he identified about class arguments are, like, yes, that is, people do operate that way, you know, like, mm-hmm. and I can feel that way about Nick too, where it's just like, yeah, no, I think that you're right to identify that as a thing that is happening right now in the moment. Mm-hmm. You know,
if we can get to the place in the general right-wing discourse where people are just contending with the ideas again and not trying to like shut each other up and like do this stuff on behalf of foreign governments, it would be a great place to get mm-hmm. to. Right. And I think if more people had that view of just contending with the ideas, everything would be much better.
All right, cool. That is all of us all out for our Nick Fuentes, Tucker Carlson coverage. Thank you for watching this show, and please support us. Please subscribe. Yeah. Do all the YouTube things. Do all the Spotify things. It really helps us out.
Become a member. We'll have members-only stuff soon.
Yeah, there's been a lot of changes going on around with everything lately. So it's been, obviously, we've been having trouble getting everybody in the same room sometimes, but yeah. There's a lot of changes happening here.
Yeah. Been better recently, but yeah.
Yeah.
we'll have it together. Thank you guys for watching. Peace.
Bye.
Thanks for tuning in to Human Reaction. Please be sure to like, follow, subscribe, and give us a review on your podcast platform of choice. And if you want to become a member and support the show financially, check out humanreactionpod.com. And remember,
also buy my book.